So today's plan is to continue to discuss CMB. And of course, we'll talk about the anisotropy. Hence that I need the projector at some point. And if we have time, we can talk about beginning of, we can start dark matter. But I think my lecture is systematically redshifted. So I don't think I will get there. But you know, latest we'll start up dark matter tomorrow. Which means the inflation is probably gonna push it off to next week, but that's fine. Then I'll just be waving hands a lot next week. So that's this calculation, just try to do it. The answer is this. Okay. Which I'll do it today anyway, because some calculations are particularly hard and not illuminating. Even the result is important. Okay, so let's remember what did we do yesterday. Is that basically we are basing on some equilibrium thing and did something like hydrogen to electron proton ratio. And that's where we get the formula from. And that's just the equilibrium distribution of massive particle. And this x is just a fraction. This is the important number. 10 to the minus 9 always comes to play. Basically, the key effect is what we try to figure out is when recombination happens. And as you have seen in the lecture and in the tutorial, this baryon to photon ratio becomes very important because 10 to the minus 9 is a very teeny number. And that teeny number basically gives us the effect that instead of temperature, things happens at the temperature where we expected, which is 1 BH over T at order 1. It actually happens at a much, much lower temperature. Just because we have tons of photons in our tail of the black body. So this is most thing I want to you to grasp is that the importance of this number and how that affect us as our estimate of when these important historical events happen. Okay, so the next thing to ask, so this is called recombination, and the next thing is to ask, so when does photon actually decouple? It's the same story. We look at the gamma, which is the interaction rate, and compare it to Hubble. When your interaction rate can't keep up with Hubble, then you decouple because you can't find a partner to interact with. So this, as we say, is given by n, how many electrons are available, times the cross-section. Okay, there is a speed, but you know you're colliding with photons. So we can ignore that. V, but then we take it to be one. And this is something we can express using our shiny new monster formula. We'll write it as x times baryon. And of course, we use the same idea, baryon is eta times n photon, which is given by that some factor, but it's proportional to T cubed. And a sigma is just a number. You can just look it up, Thompson scattering amplitude, but you actually know exactly how to do it. You have taken QED, and you just draw the Feynman diagram of electron-photon scattering and calculate that cross-section, and that's the number you put it here. It's just a number. I don't know how to spell a number. Okay, Hubble, on the other hand, since we're into, now we're in a matter domination era, remember the equality happens about a 3,000-ish, the 3,500, whatever. That's the redshift of the matter, radiation matter equality. And this happens So the key result is this happened at of order 1,000. So this is much later in the universe. So the key result of this is actually T is of order 0.273, let's say, electron volts. Is it just you pick x equals to 0.1 randomly. You just say 0.1, 10% of electrons is still free, 90% of them already form hydrogen. That's how I define my recombination error. Then you get something like 0.3 EV. It's a thing that you put in the computer, you give an X, a T will pop out. It's one-to-one correspondence. So basically, you can consider this whole equation as a function of a T. For X or T as a function of X, depends on your interpretation. If you want to get a temperature based on how many electrons are still free or can recombine, then you consider this as a function of X, T of X. That's how we get this number. And of course, on the other hand, you can consider this as just tell us how X implicitly depending on T. Okay. Then let's look at Hubble. So as I was just mentioning, there are some key numbers. Says this happens at about Z, about 1,000. But the radiation equals matter equality happens about 3 × 10,000. That's much further back in the universe. So we're already in the matter-dominated era, which means we're just going to do estimate it with the A is proportional to T to the 2/3 thing. As we have seen in tutorial and many times, H is something like 2 over 3T, that's equal. But who cares about 2 over 3 when you do estimate? This is just saying that, let's say, I'll just draw a similar sign, that T, so A to the 3/2, is proportional to T. I'm just moving the numbers around. So which means this is, but I have 1 over T for Hubble, so this is A to the minus 3/2. But I know that A basically is 1 over T, so now I have a T to the 3/2. So then I can just write H compared to H0 today is T compared to T0 today to the 3/2. So those are today, and this is measurable, this is measurable. And of course, you can express Hubble as a function of temperature when we're in a matter-dominated era. Now, basically, we have a gamma, which, as I explained, X is a function of T, implicit a function of T because of that. So this is a function of T, and the rest are just pure number. This is also a function of T. And of course, we can set them to be at the same order, which you can say that's not an equation I can solve on board. But you put it in any numerical computer, they can solve this. And they give you another number, something like 0.2523 volts. And this is one photon decouple. And if you calculate the X at that point, now that we know that temperature, X at the point 0.01. So basically, 99% of the electrons needs to be captured by the hydrogen. So the universe is really mostly neutral. And then photon finally can't find the electron frequently enough. They decouple, and we see CMB. So it's two very close error. And it's almost like it's like this. This thing is like often quoted as like the redshift of 1400 and the other one is 1100. So it's pretty close. So basically, you calculate how hydrogen can recombine. And when 99% of hydrogen combined, the photons stream free and they fall into our eyes eventually. Okay. So it's actually, this is interesting, is that this, because This tells us the photon decoupling is a rather abrupt, is a rather steep behavior. So if you imagine there's, imagine you're living in a world that the only thing affect the photon's behavior is electron density, and the only thing affect electron density is the expansion of universe. Then you know electron density slowly drop because universe is expanding, then this process will be a completely different process. But that's not true. Electron density not only drop because the universe is expanding, but mostly it is dropping because they are all trapped in a hydrogen atom. So that's that's how we explain that we have a homogeneous CMB. And of course, that's not all we have. It's amazing that we have equipment that can measure things up to 10 to the minus 5. But that's what people find.
Sorry.
Yep. Yeah.
So when you set the Hubble parameter, the rate equals, you still have two unknowns, right? There's T and X.
X is a function of T.
Okay, through this formula.
Yeah, through that thing. It's a very complex formula, but this thing has only X and T, so it's either X is an implicit function of T, or T is an implicit function of X.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why this is not easy to solve. By staring. You have to ask a computer to do it. Okay. Oh, a cute thing I want to mention is that at this point, so basically when CMB is generated, the temperature is about 3,000 Kelvin. It's about 3 today, and it happens at redshift of 1100, so it's about 3,000 Kelvin. And if you check a black body spectrum, you realize if we somehow live in the CMB era, which is entirely impossible, but if we do, you will realize our universe is a big orange. Happen to be at the visible light. Like it's redshift a lot when they travel to us. But if we the temperature there, we'll give our a spectrum that the universe is orange. So that's also a good way to remember when photon decoupling or CMB happen, is that when universe is orange, that's when it happened. Okay, so now let's move on to an isotropy. So what do we do is that, again, let's emphasize that we are not important. We're just a typical observer in a typical galaxy. You probably hear me to say this a lot of time. So what we are not interested in, that direction is cold, that direction is hot. At some point, people worry about a particular hotspot, cold or hotspot, it's because it's too big. It's not because it's cold. It's just, that feels weird that it looks like a strong correlation. Why that little patch of sky is all cold? But which direction in the sky, it shouldn't matter. And of course, what we should have done is that, imagine we have other alien species, and then we each measure something, and then we average over the ensemble. But cosmological, level of traveling is really hard, or communicating, or somehow gather this data to put all together to average over the entire universe is hard. So what we often do is average over different direction, because hopefully if you look at our sky and in different direction, you average over and calculate the correlation function, that will be an ensemble average. So that's what people do. People define this function C of theta to be taking this fluctuation you measured in a certain direction, and then you take another one, oh, your prediction in this direction, prediction in the other direction. Then you average over anything that tells us those two directions span an angle theta. So two-point function with an angle theta, and they do these things. And of course, you were like, and then what? Well, this can be, of course, done experimentally. That's what, the satellites do. Satellites have data of delta T over T all over the sky, except some part like has too many contamination from Milky Way. So it's not the full sky. Well, they have the full sky, but we can't use them all. But it's a pretty big part of sky, if we're talking about Planck. So they can do this. But what do we do? But theoretically, what you do is you claim that, remember, we think that, inflation seems to indicate that this field should be Gaussian. So that will come into play, but basically, we're going to expand it in terms of spherical harmonic, because we're talking about a huge sky, like around Earth. So then, okay, there should be some appropriate summation. Of course, L can go from 1 to infinity, but M can only go from ML to L. That's just how spherical harmonics works. That's just a complete set of function. We always want to expand things in a complete set of function. It's analogous to when we talk about the density fluctuation, structure formation, you Fourier transform it. But in our case, Fourier transform is not going to help us because we want a discrete value. No matter how good our satellite is, it has an angular resolution. So discrete is good. So then you have this thing, just plug it in, and assuming AL and ALM is choosing from a Gaussian ensemble. And the result is, then you see the M dependence disappeared. And you probably expect the Laurent polynomial will pop out. And then you call this thing CL. And the CL is like the delta function between this. So it's like ALM and AL prime M prime just becomes, it just says that this thing should be orthogonal, something like that. So basically then, what they do is that you take some theory, and you push it through things, which we'll mention immediately. But the point is, this is a theoretical prediction. And the first thing we worry about is that, how do this compare with my observation? So remember, this is a theory prediction by choosing ALM all from some Gaussian numbers. You just have a Gaussian distribution and you draw random numbers out of them, and then you get a prediction. And then you wonder, of course, how this thing will compare with the observables. So there is a very nice way to actually do that calculation. But basically, it says CL is a sum of all the M quantum number. So it's from minus L to L, so you have 2L plus 1. So by statistics, you expect this go as this. Right? I mean, I could do the calculation, but that's what we expect. It's square root of that, 1 over square root of N. The more sample you get, the small variance you have. And then you can see it's a kind of a problem for small l. That for small l, we have a really large deviation. And this thing is called the cosmic variance. It's a systematic system. Mathematical error, it's just saying the first few spherical harmonics just simply don't have enough number of different functions. So this expansion, after you expand it in terms of m, there's just not enough m to do all these statistics. And this is why that people never worry about, you know, measurement lower than, say, 10, L equals 10. It's because your cosmic variance is so huge that almost anything you observe will agree with your theory. And this is some error you can't reduce. It just says we don't have enough sample. So now let's talk about how it's very complicated process to relate it to what happened in our orange universe to what we actually observe now. So I'm just going to describe different kind of things we have to think about, and I'm not even going to describe all of them, because that would be a good list already without describing all of them. And then, you know, you can read Mukhanov. I recommend Mukhanov's book, that it did the analytical, like he does as few assumptions as possible, trying to get as analytic result as possible, but they look still really complicated. And there is other reference that I uploaded this morning or last night that talk about it in a more less calculation, but try to get more intuitive. And if you really, like, I'm really interested in CMB, the best reference is definitely Win Hu. So this guy did in 1995 his PhD on talking about this. His entire PhD is about this power spectrum. Power spectrum just means you draw CL, actually, this whole thing as a function L. What it does look like. And his website has lots of very intuitive draw pictures and drawings and like even moving videos. And you know, if it's kind of crazy, because when he does his work, WMAP is only launched in 2001. So he is really trying to predict things. He will actually say, we have cosmological parameter omega b. How does that impact on the spectral power spectrum? Because before WMAP, there are a bunch of balloon data. COBE is not good enough because COBE has angular sensitivity to 7 degrees. And if you convert that to L, basically you only get it to 20-ish. We will look at the power spectrum, 20-ish really doesn't tell us much. And you know, it's really only until WMAP we have lots of good data actually to study this power spectrum. And you know, Wayne explained it in 5-6 years before WMAP was launched. And it's certainly, I think, the best reference to go to if you want to know more about it. And I'll try to continue with my hands and hopefully like look at a little bit of more things. So now I'm just going to wave my hands as why this thing is so hard to calculate. So what kind of effect could be possibly happen between, you know, CMB when photon decouple throughout the long journey to us? Well, a lot. So normally people will separate this thing called intrinsic and the journey. So basically, this part try to capture what would effect if an effect on delta t over t before they left on the surface of the last scattering. What they scatter with the last electron, what would happen? And this one capture effect after they left the surface of the last lecture, what happened? Okay, there is some gauge dependence, like you can choose different gauge, but you can always just choose a gauge and calculate the sum is gauge invariant because that's observable, that's what we observe. So basically, this has three contributions. So on the last scattering surface, there could be gravitational potential. There's inhomogeneity. We know that there's inhomogeneity, that the universe is slightly inhomogeneous, so that there must be some this photon must feel some gravitational potential at that surface. So that will have a effect. And then the other thing is when it is scattered with the last electron, then there could be a Doppler effect because that last electron could be, for example, moving away from us. Then if you scatter with photon, the photon might capture something, some information about that. And the last is easy to understand. It says that if we have inhomogeneity captured by delta M, if somewhere is denser, and of course it's going to be hotter. And that's the whole argument about this universe. When you get denser, it gets hotter. So, well, you would imagine there's some like a relationship between them. Like the overdensity probably is also going to cause the potential. So there is. So these two effects are related and partially canceled in some particular assumption. It's actually really neat. They combine to be one term. But those are what could happen before the photon even left. So after the photon left, during a journey, there could be, this is called the Sachs-Wolfe effect. It basically says some gravitational potential effect. Then you could actually have an integrated Sachs-Wolfe effect. That's because if you imagine a photon leave, enter a gravitational potential, it will be blue shifted. This is what we learned in GR, because it gains energy. That's the simplest explanation. And if it leaves the gravitational potential, it will lose energy because then it will be red shift. And you would imagine this effect cancel, but we have a universe. It depends on time. Maybe, you know, while it's falling down, while this is photon is climbing up, the potential suddenly becomes shallower. Then it didn't gain as much energy as it lost. No, it didn't lose as much energy as it gained. So you have a total effect of being blue shifted in that scenario, like if your potential becomes shallow. So, and there's numerous other effects is listed in the reference Max Tegmark's review. That it has a huge table. And this is, you know, the first four important ones. There's also another effect is that, as I think some of you already asked me, you're like, what do you mean you choose X randomly? That, well, this recombination, it's not like, we always call it a last scattering surface, but it's actually a spherical shell. Like the photon could, that particular photon could decouple a little earlier than you predict, a little late. So then there's this finite sixness problem. So those are the biggest components, and there might be some other effects. All in all, I'm just trying to calculate this thing is really hard. But even if you have an inflation model give you a power spectrum of a power law, actually calculating this, but then you know this calculating this thing become ultra important because that's like the farthest we will ever be able to see. That's the definition of CIB, is we can say something with photons. And of course, now there's gravitational waves. So I don't know like if we're going to be see beyond the last scattering surface soon. But at this point, the furthest we will ever be able to see with eyes, or eyes-like optics equipment is this place. So everybody tries to calculate this. Then there is this CAMP. It's a computer program that you input an inflation potential, and it spits out the power spectrum. And then you can compute, then there's some other program to compute your power spectrum compared to the observation. Then you can, you know, rule out models. Okay, I think so far, that's how much I want to talk about what happened. And hopefully this still works. With hope. So now I'm just going to look at some pictures of CMB. All this beautiful Windows background that I never bothered to change. I don't know if I want to enter key. Oh, no, no, no. Ah! So this is the beautiful telescope that made the initial discovery. And you see they have a huge horn, and there could be pigeons. The pigeons are not at fault, after all. And then, and this is what is measured. This is COBE, the first satellite. It says there is black body, and there is data. And there is really, like, it's like that. It's the best theory experiment match you could imagine. Yeah.
I remember you mentioned about the atmosphere.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is COBE. COBE is a satellite, so it's okay.
No, but I'm
yeah, asking here.
You, in that
here.
One, where was the first experiment?
The first experiment is here. See? Patton right. Wilson, and the COBE is there. See, there's an atmosphere. So that's why we send a satellite, we send the balloons. Like in order to match that, like measure that thing, you have to be above the atmosphere. And these guys are really lucky. They're not looking for CMB. Hence, they found it. sometimes discoveries are like that. And then, you know, it's super, super successful. So we just keep sending more satellites. It's not that clear, but you haven't seen these pictures, right? It's just like, there's like, because say COBE is 7 degrees, so that plot is not very detailed, then you get more and more detailed. Planck can measure up to like 2,000 or 3,000 L. And then, yeah, okay, there's this one, and it has, and there's fluctuation of 10^-5, and here's our CMB sky. And then I think the next plot is take it, and do all those calculations proposed, and that's the CL. And that's referred as the power spectrum. And so I will show you a more recent data. So this is from WMAP, which the resolution you can see it's not that high. When you go to high L, which corresponding to smaller angle, then you have huge things. And WMAP can measure up to here, and WMAP basically give up at L equals 1,000. Says, I can't really tell. But you know, at the beginning, it's pretty nice. And then you have, you know, Boomerang is a really famous balloon. Maybe just because I can remember the name somehow.
What is Boomerang?
Sorry. It's a balloon.
Ah, it's a balloon.
Oh, yeah, that's a balloon. I think it's bar. Is it bar might be something related to Antarctic? Yeah.
This is basically like the two-point functions.
Yeah.
So why is there the peak around 100?
Excellent. See, you predicted what I'm going to talk about next. But I'm going just to show you the Planck data. Cool. Sorry, that's just you can see I'm super organized. don't worry. I can find my lecture. So see, this is measured all the way there. So yeah, why there's peak? It's a very good question. So my plan of the rest of the lecture, I don't think I can get to dark matter. So then I might as well spend some time on this plot. Why there's peak? Actually, the first peak is so high. And this first peak is very important. Basically, the location where this peak is tells us the universe is flat. Ooh, intriguing, isn't it? Okay. So I could refer you to Mukhnov's book, And he actually calculated what's delta t over t has a four contribution. Each of them has a formula about that scary or more scary. And then he will tell you, look at this location. If you change this parameter, then they will coincide, they will constructively interfere, you'll get a peak. But let's go from some other direction. So how do we understand there is a peak? Well, remember that we always consider, okay, right before decoupling, we have considered the whole universe. By whole universe, I meant I'm a creature living in that period, so my whole universe is not that big. It's only 380,000 years old. Not our whole universe, but the CMB whole universe. Yeah? And as we said, when decoupling happens, so basically we sort of treat it as an abrupt transition between a photon and a baryon fluid to a photon fluid and a baryon fluid. They separate and the baryon can grow, yeah, and the dark matter can grow earlier. But let's just talk about baryon then can grow, then they are different. So before that, remember the reason that we say that they are a big soup and the density doesn't grow is because the pressure that is big, because the photon provides lots of pressure. So the pressure is quickly building up and it balances off with the self-gravity. So they just oscillate and form the sound wave instead of growing. And that's the exactly thing we're talking about. So considering the universe is playing music, like a flute. So you have a tube of air, and then you wonder, what's the fundamental note? It will be the thing that stretch across the whole flute. So in similar idea, then the fundamental note that the universe play at that period of time on that this ball of oscillating gas would be across the whole observable universe at that time. So this radius would be determined by the first this much years, because that's how old the universe is. So then the whole thing is oscillating, and that precisely corresponding to first peak. That's the fundamental mode of that sound wave oscillating. And you were like, huh, good, but how is it supposed to do with the curvature of the universe? So now we understand why there's a peak, because, you know, there's fundamental modes and, you know, not so fundamental modes. Well, how it has to do with curvature is that basically, remember, what we see here is our sky. So we're looking at a surface at 300, when universe is 380,000 years ago, it's this last scattering surface. And what this measure is how big this thing. So this is us. This is a typical observer particle at the last scattering. So this is the last scattering surface. And this, you know, happens at 380,000 years. And now we are at, you know, 14 billion years. And we look there. And see what the CMB observe, these CL, each L is basically, you can just use L equals to pi over theta to convert L into the angular scale. So, oh, more normally, 180 degree over theta. So then, what we want to think about it is this whole ball of gas is oscillating and has a fundamental node here. And how we observe it as an angle. So that's how things work. It's like, it's sort of like the story about supernovae and the dark energy thing. You're observing things. See, that's the angle of Leander. Sorry, using you as an example. But you know, if I walk further, this angle becomes smaller, right? And so basically that angle, if I'm looking at a thing, I know what size it is, will tell me the distance. And in our case, we're doing the reverse problem. This is something we can calculate because now we know how universe evolve. And this is something we can calculate because we know how universe evolve and we wonder about that angle. And that angle is slightly smaller than 1 degree, but kind of close. So if you invert it, it corresponding to about 200. Why do you like to sleep so much? See? Slightly less 1 degree, 200. And you're like, okay, sure, but the curvature, the universe, the shape, the geometry of the universe, how do I relate to that? Well, how big the angle depends on the perception. Since our universe was orange, I'm gonna explain this with an orange. So here is a mandarin orange. I use it because it's easy to peel, also because I speak mandarin. But anyway, the point is, suppose I may also, like it really exaggerate things. Suppose, because this is definitely not that exaggeration, but suppose I'm the observer, like on the bottom. Like, can you even see there is a dot? So that's me. And on the my exactly opposite top, there is some light source. Yeah? So even without solving GR, without looking at the geodesic equation, the light is going to follow the big circle to travel to me. It's very intuitive. And now we can just peel the orange. And it looks like this. If you peeled the orange before, so it looked like this. Yeah? So you can pass it around and look at the orange that get peeled. Or if you want to have more orange, you can peel them. You're welcome to eat them too. I don't understand why people eat orange. They are better at explaining the geometry of the universe. But my deepest fear this morning is that I was afraid of my orange will get squashed, then it'll be too juicy to explain universe. But anyway, what do we see? The peel is of this shape. See, that's why I need that. There's absolutely no way I can draw that thing. You know my skill of drawing straight lines. So, okay, let's be, in order for the exaggeration, I'll claim this is the object I want to observe, which is at the equator of that orange. And then, of course, because light bends this way, but I'm ignorant, I thought this will be the perception of the angle because it's on an orange. So this is closed universe. I wish I can find a fruit for open universe, maybe next year. And then that's a flat universe. As you can see, that this position of the peak, which is basically how many degrees it is, has a difference if your universe is curved. And you probably would imagine that it would be an open universe. So hence, basically, you can claim that if we had a closed universe, we should have seen this a little bit to the left. And if we have an open universe, we should see that peak a little bit right. It turns out, of course, if you look at the calculation, it has dependence on omega baryon, omega dark matter, blah. What? But it turns out all those effects sort of cancel around our benchmark universe, like the universe, the 0.3, 0.7, and that's our universe. It turns out if you just say there's some perturbation around it, then the effect of baryon turn out to be the same as matter, so they cancel. So really, where this peak is telling us we're living in a flat universe. So this is the first thing I want to emphasize about this plot is that the first thing you notice is, of course, hey, there's a peak. It's really huge. So this peak is indeed very important.
You're assuming that the curvature of the universe hasn't changed, right?
Well, it's an it, if you well, sure, you can. Well, the thing is that no, the curvature can't change, right? Because the only metric, we derived this, the only metric that is compatible with our, this is the space metric, and then there's just the, there's that, and there's that. Right? So that k is actually a discrete number. You can make it a continuous by sacrificing taking a t at a zero, not at a one. If it's at a one, if you say, I choose the initial condition or final condition to be scale factor at a today is at a one, sorry, today, not zero, today. If we fix that, the k only has three choices. So that's actually, but your question is really good because of course you look at that plot, it's not a discrete choice. So that plot, that indeed you're going to go to a coordinate, you are going to use your scaling symmetry again to make it not discrete. And then you use that metric, you use the k continuous metric to do the calculation. And then you can actually use that to measure your, so k, although k is discrete, but omega k is not. And that's, that can be done. Okay, and my beautiful plot disappeared. Okay, what's the next thing you wonder about? The next thing you wonder about, look, this is a very interesting, it tells, definitely tells us something about like this, right? It's decaying quite rapidly as you go to large L. So this is called silk damping. So the idea about why this should be damped is basically because if we go really high L, according to this convenient formula, it means we're going to very small angular distance, which corresponding our wavelengths really small. And remember, you see, there's a whole bunch of photon there, just like, just, that's what the relativistic particle do. They try to create an equilibrium. They just move around and they make things very chaotic, and they're like, whoop. Then we're at the same temperature. So the photon moving there kind of like to erase any fluctuation. They like to things to be thermodynamic equilibrium and all that. And if you have really small wavelengths, which is, you can compare it with the Freeman path of the photon. And if the photon is able to travel beyond that wavelength, and it managed to erase the temperature fluctuation pretty well. So that's where the damping comes from. And here, what else do you want to think about? You see there is a damping except somewhere, right? There's somewhere, something really weird about here. Where is the damping? It seems that like the third one is not damped at all. Like this, the first three peaks are very interesting. Here, who you saw a damping? And there's like the first peak is ridiculously big compared to the second one. But the third one seems to be even higher than the second one. What's that all about? Okay, so let's still thinking about our oscillating fluid. But before that, what we're gonna think about, so basically is that if you have a spring, and I have a ball hanging there. And if you add some mass, the ball is going to move closer towards the where the gravity is. Okay, this is a very not too skilled drawing. But you see my point is that if you add a mass to an oscillating system, they're going to get to be drawn to the Earth, and you have more. So if now we think about our oscillating universe as a big, huge spring in our gravitational potential, because there's inhomogeneity, so there is gravitational potential from the Sachs-Wolfe effect. And now you say the universe is just like oscillating. And then now you say, let's add a little baryon. So the adding baryon is like adding mass to this thing, which just make them more and more want to go to the bottom of the potential. So this is compressed. So the point is that if you're adding baryon into our photon baryon fluid, which is oscillating, it make them want to compress more instead of a rarefact, or whatever that word is. And then you have, then basically they say delta T supposedly to be an oscillating thing, happily oscillating. And now you put a gravitational potential, you sort of have the effect of damping them. So this thing just gets shifted. It says that in the compressed happen to correspond to this, then they are more compressed. So if you draw an oscillator and draw an oscillator, added a mass, then if you graft, it looks like this instead, rather than this, because of the added mass. And now we only care about the delta T. So you flip this thing, and that's why your odd numbered peaks will be higher. So there, of course, there is the, then you have to do some calculation to show the odd numbers of peak corresponding to the compressed region and the even number of peak corresponding to the rarefacted region. But if you assume that, that's why that the third peak is actually compare, it's actually look boosted. And that's because the effect of the baryon. So that says, now that I can remind you that at the end of last tutorial, you see WMAP also give us a number for this baryon density. That's how they measure it. Again, it has many contributions, but the relatively peak height between the first two is determined by baryons. So here, the is the coolest thing I found recently is, I wonder why I didn't find it earlier, but it's the, see, says build a universe and compare to CMB data. So that thing is CMB and we're trying to build a universe that to match it. So, well, we don't have that many atoms. Oh, here's a peak. We don't have that much dark matter either. And then we do want loads of dark energy. See, that's a closed universe. Flatness 1.26. And that's not our universe, so let's make it flat. Huh? The location of first peak matched. And we have some Hubble constant. Oh, that tells us how big our Hubble constant. We didn't quite talk about this at all. It's related to galaxy. But then, so what are we gonna do? So basically what happens is the L bigger than 200, which is where the first peak, is what we have discussed before, because the wavelength is smaller than the whole universe. By then it's called the sub-horizon mode. And there are some super horizon modes we haven't discovered, which is to the left of the first peak. And that is determined by inflation. Basically, inflation predicts the left of the first peak. Except you can work on some project really fun that actually have feature at the end. That's what I worked on. And then the model was sort of ruled out. But lots of people actually try to compare it with the data and then tweak the model so that it can find the data. It was really cool. Like, we find we have a model that has oscillatory at the tail of that W. Like, remember the decaying tail? And then we can put oscillation on it. And there were tons of people looking for those oscillations. Alas, we didn't find any. Well, otherwise I'll hit the like a jackpot of the century or something. No, not that inflation model is not right. So then at the last, then I'll show you what David found. That last 2 minutes. Basically, class is over, but here's another power spectrum. You know, and there's something. Oh.
There'll be coffee as you get it. Almost.
Yeah, so class is over. We'll start dark matter tomorrow.